fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, are we going to war with Iran? Are we going to war with China over tariffs? The poor farmers are dying, just dying, and losing hope. Apple had the Supreme Court rule against them yesterday. People will cheer. But at the same time, you're talking about breaking up Facebook and regulating this industry. That will not work out well for conservatives. Gold is up. Bitcoin is up. The Dow is way down. Why? I'll explain. A new world order in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Boy, I'm going on vacation starting tomorrow. I'm going to do the show tomorrow, and then I'm going on vacation. And looking forward to it. Except I'm getting sick. It's great. Last night I noticed, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Your body just knows, doesn't it?
I have a terrible news for you as well, that you have another day of work. You think you're going tomorrow. It's actually the next day. So it's very sad.
You've got to be kidding me. Today's not, not Wednesday?
No, you're just a day off. So I've just made your life even worse.
You suck. Okay, so let me talk to you about the Mediterranean. Yet another great vacation. Now, this one is happening a year from around today, really. It's happening, I think, in, what is it, next March or next May? We're going to go to the Mediterranean. And this is something that people have asked me to do forever. And my wife has asked me to do. And my daughters have been like, we got to go to Greece. They took, you know, ancient Greek history for their, you know, their major in school. So I've been being pressured by my family. So what I decided to do was do a couple of things. Take my family on vacation in an unbelievable way and invite you to come with. Huh? Because what I like to do is I really like, and my family is like, oh, Dad, shut up. What I like to do is I like to go to these places and find the really cool things that like nobody knows about with history. And then, you know, read up all about them. So what we've done is we've put together a cruise through history. Now, the cruise through history is taking place next spring, and we're going to take you to the foundations of our faith, the foundations of freedom and the republic and human progress. What pulled us out of the Dark Ages? What was the Renaissance about? What does a republic really mean? And how did we get here with our faith? What does our faith really mean? You're going to love this. We are going to go to, we're starting in Venice, then we're going to Greece, then we're going to King's Landing. It's in Croatia. And then we're going to Jerusalem. Did I say Athens? We're going
to
Athens too.
This is
going to
be amazing.
It's amazing.
It's going to be an amazing trip.
Amazing. And so what I did is they said, Glenn, you could invite anybody you wanted. And I'm like, I got to have David Barton there.
Right, right. Okay. David Barton.
Got to have Rabbi Lappin.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to have, I mean, I don't know if you know this, Bill O'Reilly's degree is in history.
I don't think people realize that.
Yeah.
Because he's so much about the news of the day and he's like, I don't want to speculate. He's a history guy.
He's a history guy.
I mean, his books tell you that story. Yeah. But
so I wanted him. And then they said, is there anybody else? And I'm like, there's nobody else I'd like
really?
To invite. Nobody.
Not and even, you like, can think of one person.
Not one. Not one that I liked.
Right.
You know,
so you could think of
with.
You could think of people, but you couldn't think of one you wanted
so
to invite.
I said, just open up the phone book. And so they had a phone book, which is really odd.
It's almost like that's a 30-year-old reference of having the phone book
right
there.
So they just open up the phone book. Uh-huh. And strangely, your mother's name, because you weren't even, when they had the phone book, your name wasn't in there.
Oh, okay.
And so I asked your mom, and she said, is Stu going? And I said, no. And she's like, oh, thank God. Okay, yes. But then I don't know what happened, and she said, I should invite you, so you're going to.
This tells the truth about how great this trip is going to be. I'm actually going on it.
Yeah, I know.
I avoid every one of your trips.
This is one of the things I've been telling everybody I know. You've got to go to Europe. You want to see these places. You've got to go now. You got to go now. I mean, look at, do you see that what Italy is doing? They are now, they're kicking George Soros out because he's been funding all of these boats that are bringing up all the immigrants. And the prime minister, I think yesterday, said, enough, get out. And so they've just had enough. So if you really want to see Athens, you know, that's a temple. That is a temple to what? Zeus, I think. So that's a temple. That's also exactly where Paul gave his Mars Hill speech, which is, I mean, just full of history and riches. That could be gone in 10 years. So you really want to see it. We really want you to bring your kids. If you have kids and you could afford it, bring your kids. But just come, because you're going to learn more than ever. And you don't have to go to any of that stuff. You can just do all of the stuff on your own, or, you know, just take the ship's tours. But you can do it with us, too. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Cruise through history. It's taking place next year. Go to comesailaway.com for all the details. That's comesailaway.com. Comesailaway.com. So are we going to war with Iran? I don't think so, because it would be not a good thing. It would be much better for them to collapse like the Soviet Union did. But Iran is in a box. We've trapped them in this box. And the Saudis yesterday said that they did hit those Saudi oil tankers. One of them was bringing oil to us. So they're trying to disrupt the Middle East, and they're trying to disrupt the global economy and bring everybody down. Yesterday, looks like we have a plan now for 120,000 troops to go over to Iran for an invasion. But this is just a plan that they updated. It doesn't mean that it's actually going to happen. I'm hoping that it's not, because it will not be easy. Not that Iraq was easy, but it will not be in Iraq. It will be much bloodier and much worse. Iran is just one step up, it would say, from Afghanistan and from Iraq. So I don't think we're going there. I think Donald Trump is the president, when it comes to foreign affairs, he's the president that I've always wanted to have. I've always said, you know, the president needs to have like a twitchy eye. Not with our allies and not with us. I want to know whose side he's on. I want to know. No, he wouldn't do that. But the bad actors in the world should look at our president and go, you know, he's just crazy. Now, he just might do that. And I think that works to our favor. You want to appear stable and yet just crazy enough to go, you know what? Let's do it. And I think that's what he's doing, but I don't know. The tariffs are a good example of he does keep his word. You know, he has said, and this is one of the things that I was really concerned about, were these tariffs, because that is the one thing he has said for 40 years. He's for tariffs. The free market is what has changed the world. And whenever you get into a trade war, it usually leads to a hot war. It's what happened in World War II. You just don't want to put tariffs up. In World War II, we put the tariffs up, and that was really the catalyst. Now, we were in a different situation, but that was the catalyst for the Great Depression, the Smoot-Hawley Act. It was not good. They never work out to anyone's favor. Now, if the president is playing hardball, that's good. However, it needs to change pretty quickly. He's going to lose the farm vote, and that's very concerning to me. These farmers have been, you know, they have really been supportive of him every step of the way. And when they were, you know, I mean, you want to talk about taking one for the team. You see the movie Chernobyl? Are you watching the miniseries?
I've only seen the first episode.
Okay,
don't spoil it for me.
I won't. I won't.
Is something go wrong with this plant? Is that what happens? Darn it, Glenn!
Yes.
Unbelievable. Yes. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, everybody knows what's happening in that. It's in the first episode, yeah, no. And it's a part of history. Anyway, but last night they were looking for volunteers to do things. Hmm. And one of the guys, one of the Soviets said, they're all like, you're crazy. We're not doing that. And he said, that's what we do. That's what we've always done. And there is always a crisis in every generation. And this is our generation's crisis. And you will do it or millions will die. Who wants to volunteer? And they all knew they were volunteering for about 20 minutes of life. And it's an amazing scene.
There really were legitimate heroes in that story.
Heroes.
That were Soviet citizens that
heroes.
Stepped up and did crazy yeah. stuff they never should have done.
All of the people that are involved, all the people that are now involved in the second, they're all starting to realize, I'm dead soon. And it's amazing what they do. Mm. I only bring that up because I look at the farmers. The farmers, they voted for Donald Trump. And they were willing to put their money and their livelihood where their mouth was because they're the ones that were on the front line of these tariffs. They're being destroyed right now. Just destroyed.
Intentionally by China. They're targeting,
yeah.
you know, red states and politically sensitive districts
right.
To target the tariffs because right. they know it'll make a maximum impact.
Right.
And honestly, so far, they're, you know, the Trump administration has done two things. One is say, well, we'll just take this tax money and redistribute it to those people. I'm not sure what party that is. I thought that was a Democrat thing to do, to take tax money and redistribute it to their chosen
parties. That's also
parties.
Central planning now.
Yeah, that's very scary to
it's
me.
Bad.
And secondarily, though, and this is one I think has more, I don't know, to me, credibility, is, you know, the bottom line is, where are they going to go? Where are they going? You're going to go vote for one of these people? I mean,
no.
So, I mean, you know, yes,
no,
this policy
just,
is hurting them, but I mean, what are they going to do?
I don't know.
Going to go vote for Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah.
I mean, where are you going?
It's just bad. It's going to create a forgotten man again. Mm. Nobody's paying attention to the farmers who have taken one for the team. They really have. We might have paid higher prices on this or that. They've taken one for the team. They're about to lose their farms. And we need to be grateful to the farmers yeah. and support our farmers because they don't know what to do. Now, Donald Trump said yesterday, well, we'll see what happens. We're going to meet in June. But I just want to point out, after he got his trade deal with Mexico and Canada, he did not remove the tariffs because he likes the tariffs.
He thinks it's good policy. Yeah, and he told us that 100,000
right.
times, right? I mean, he does believe it.
Right.
And he has been consistent on that for as long as he's been in the public eye.
Now, people are concerned that China is going to dump our treasuries. I don't think so because they've already done that and it hurt them. Remember, it was about a year ago they came out and said, we're getting out of the treasury business. And they started dumping our treasuries. It didn't hurt us. It really hurt them. So there's a chance that they've already learned that lesson that I don't know if I want to do that because they were the victim of that scheme that they did. But this is why gold is up. I think gold is having its best week in I don't even know how many years. Bitcoin, they declared today Bitcoin the winter of
crypto winter is over.
It's over. And that is because people are starting to say, what I want to talk to you about today, the new world order is being formed. The old world order is gone. And I don't think that it's coming back. And that goes all the way to the court system. It goes to our school systems. I mean, look how much has changed. Do you even recognize your country anymore? Do you recognize, is the old world order still there? It's been undermined at every step of the way. It's faltering. And it appears as though everyone is building something new.
And even basic things like personal responsibility and common sense are dead.
And I want to go there when we come back. 1 minute. 23andMe, the Health and Ancestry Service Kit, where you can explore 125 different personalized genetic reports that may reveal the link between your DNA and your health and your traits, including your chances of developing certain diseases. Diabetes is a growing public health challenge. 1 in 3 Americans in the United States has pre-diabetes, but 90% of those with pre-diabetes don't know that they have it. When you know, you can do something about it. Type 2 diabetes is influenced by genetics. It's not just lifestyle and weight. Type 2 is a condition that typically develops as we get older and is caused by many factors, including diet, lack of proper exercise, weight gain, and our genes. The Type 2 Diabetes Report from 23andMe offers insight into your genetic likelihood for developing type 2 diabetes and empowers you with personalized results, and tools that will help you prevent the disease. The report was developed by 23andMe and their scientists using data and insights gathered from more than 2.5 million 23andMe customers that have volunteered their information. They consented to participate in this research, and they are helping a great many people. Could help you. Order your 23andMe Health and Ancestry Service Kit at 23andme.com/Beck. That's the number 23andme.com/Beck. We pause for 10 seconds. Station ID.
All right, let me tell you, common sense is dead, personal responsibility is dead. I want to start with a story, and I want to advocate on behalf of one Lindsay Glass.
Lindsay Glass.
Lindsay Glass is a woman who was arrested last week in Plano, Texas.
Right here.
Yes, right here. And it was in relation to a mass shooting that happened a couple of years ago. If you remember the story, a person went and they killed their estranged wife and 7 other people.
Oh, yeah.
At a football watching party. Remember
yeah,
that? It was like they were watching the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So she was arrested, Lindsay Glass, last week. Why? Because she violated a Texas alcoholic beverage code that prohibits sale to certain persons. Okay? She's a bartender. She's working at a bar. And this is, first of all, personal responsibility being dead. This law is all over the country where bartenders get blamed if they serve too much alcohol to a patron. Now, I understand the concept behind it. However, it is not the bartender's responsibility how you use alcohol. It is your responsibility how you use alcohol. And you should be responsible for what you do when you have too much to drink, not the person who gave you the drinks. And we know this because no liquor store gets in trouble for selling 3 bottles of Jack Daniels to some person who comes in and then goes out and drinks them all and does something terrible. We don't do that. We just expect 23 or 25-year-old people who just to monitor the individual blood alcohol levels of everybody who comes into the bar every night. That's all it is. They're just responsible. And for that, they do get paid the, 15, 20 bucks an hour with tips. They just have to monitor blood alcohol level of every single patron
that
comes
craziness.
In.
It's craziness.
It's
just craziness.
It's completely unfair.
Now, I understand if it is somebody who is like, I got a car keys, and right. I'm just going to... Then you have a responsibility just as a human being to
yes.
go... No more for you, and I'm calling you a cab.
And I think it's a great idea for a restaurant to have that policy and to
right.
try to do the best they can to train people. They have the right to refuse them, just
right.
like you have the right to go in and drink. However, to legally hold someone responsible under criminal statute...
Especially if you are a functioning alcoholic. My blood levels
oh my God.
Had to have been massively high.
You've talked about this before. How much did you drink every day when you were an alcoholic?
I don't even know. 16.
It's like a tumbler.
32, yeah, 32 ounces at a sitting of Jack, pure Jack.
Well, didn't you splash a Coke? Some Coke?
Well, yes, I did splash a little Coke. I showed it the Coke can. So I used to do that, at 5 o'clock. That's I just drink that back, just pour it in. And no one would know that I was hammered. When I got hammered, it was much more than that, but nobody...
Your blood alcohol level must have been through the roof.
Through the roof.
Yeah.
And I did business with executives hammered, and nobody even knew. No one knew. So how am I going to put a bartender The real dangerous ones are the ones that you can't tell because they're alcoholics.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's exactly. That's how that happens. Right. But let's just say for a moment, you don't buy that analysis. OK, the bartender should be monitoring the individual blood alcohol levels of every patron that comes in. And you think, OK, she served her too much. She served this guy too much. And he went and he killed a bunch of people. We have to hold her responsible. In a minute, I want to give you the rest of the story of what else happened this night. Because the fact that this woman may go to jail for a year for this is an absolute disgrace. It is I cannot believe it's happening in this country, number one. But I cannot believe it's happening in freaking Texas. In Texas, of all places, where we're supposed to be. This is a place we're like calling ourselves. We're calling ourselves a republic pretty much to this day. And we are going to take personal responsibility so far out of what happened to this evening. We're going to throw this woman in jail. And the story that is being told about her is completely the opposite of what actually happened. It's an absolute disgrace. And I would love to lay this out for you here in a minute.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back in just a minute.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
So Dawn to Dusk is an extended-release mental focus and energy supplement. It lasts up to 10 hours and improves your mood and, most importantly, your focus. Because if you've ever get on the coffee stuff or the energy drinks nonsense, I mean, some of that stuff tastes pretty good. You might enjoy coffee, but if you're trying to constantly depend on it to get through a day of work after a late night, or whether you just have a lot of meetings or you just really need to be particularly focused, you know that there's a crash associated with that, and it's just not fun. There's a study in Denmark that analyzed the deterioration of the attention span, talking about Twitter, talking about all the news that's kind of flowing over us every single day, and it's changed the way our attention span operates. I love Dawn to Dusk because it really helps you get that focus, especially in that early afternoon area where there might be some, you know, those meetings you go into, not naming any names to the people sitting in this room that might bore you a little bit. It helps you out, get you through the meeting. It's great. It's from Brickhouse Nutrition. So if you want to improve your performance at work or life in general, go to BrickhouseGlenn.com right now. Get 15% off your first order with the offer code Glenn, or call 833-RING-BHN. BrickhouseGlenn.com or 833-RING-BHN.
You want to hear more conservative voices? You want to hear the leading conservative voices? Go to blazetv.com. That's blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and save $10. Welcome to the program. There was a mass shooting, 2 years ago? Of people just watching a Dallas Cowboys game. And it turned out to be a
jilted ex-husband or estranged husband.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, he's gone to jail, right? Or is he dead?
He's dead. He's dead.
Mm-hmm. But now somebody else has gone to jail. Somebody else is to blame. And that is the bartender who served him before he left to murder his family.
Yes. And so my first case here is just basically like it's a ridiculous law. When I went through training at a restaurant, they trained us on this. You got to make sure that, you know, no one is drunk, that you're serving drinks. And it's just a ridiculous expectation.
Well, 19-year-olds should know. Right? The blood alcohol level of the patrons they're serving.
Right.
They should know that.
Yeah, of course. They should be able to.
Intuitively.
Hundreds at a time, by the way.
Obviously, you can't by law test them, but you should just look at them and know.
Yeah. And even though you might be a server who's not even of age of drinking, so you would have legally no way to recognize what drunk even is.
That's nuts.
But that is the law.
And the ones that you're really worried about, you know, are the nice ones. You know, mm-hmm. you're not worried mm-hmm. about saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but I think you've had enough." What the hell do you mean? That never, never happens.
Okay, so let me give you the rest of this. Now, Glenn, as an alcoholic, you're talking about in recovery ish.
Yes. Finally, I'm an expert.
Yeah, you're an expert on something. Talking about. If you believe this to be a legitimate law, okay, the bartender, okay, this person's way over the line. It's ridiculous. How many drinks would you have to serve them, would you say? I mean,
it depends on
20? 12?
15? It depends on how you're mixing them, and it depends on their size, their weight, and their tolerance.
So let me
tolerance changes for everybody.
And you're expecting restaurant workers to judge that.
Right.
Of course. That's a complicated biological.
You could have served me in a restaurant. I could have ordered a Jack and Coke, and it probably wouldn't have touched me until I had maybe eight.
Eight?
Yeah.
Okay. And
you're getting a little, you know, you're getting two fingers of Jack, and that's nothing.
Nothing to someone like you.
Correct.
Okay. So let me give you the first piece of evidence here, beyond the fact that the law is ridiculous. The man who did this murder was served five drinks.
Mm.
Total. He was served five drinks.
Over the time period of?
Great question. But first, let me give you this.
Okay.
Lindsay Glass.
If it's a minute and a half,
right? Yes,
you might be onto something.
Okay. But let me give you this. Lindsay Glass, the woman who was charged here, she's not gone to prison yet, but she's been charged with this crime. She only served him four of the drinks. So now we're at a point where now we're charging this woman for essentially accessory to a mass shooting because she served a guy four drinks.
What was she serving him?
I will give you that here in one second.
Okay.
The four drinks. Here we go. Two well gins and two beers.
That's nothing.
That's nothing. For even the generic average drinker, that is nothing. Now, let me give you more, though. This was over two visits.
What?
Two visits to the bar.
Like so in the same night?
In the same night.
Okay.
Here are the details. The first visit was near 2:30 in the afternoon. The second visit was 4 hours later.
Oh, this is
ridiculous.
Get out of
here.
So now we're talking about she served four drinks over the course of 4 hours, which you could, if nothing else happened, you could drive and not be near the legal limit.
Yeah,
if you had four drinks in 4 hours. That's like nothing.
Two beers is nothing.
Nothing.
Two beers. Okay. I mean, I'm operating the lawnmower and not yet thinking I can turn this thing over and clean the blaze while it's on.
Right. Now,
it may now not occur to me that that would be a bad idea, but when I was drinking, no problem.
Now, she suspected that he may have gone to another bar in between, okay? Because he did, to her, appear to be a little tipsy. Now, that's where it goes from there. She actually texted a coworker, a guy named Timothy Banks, from the bar about her concern over his behavior and asked him to come to talk to the guy. So she's now taken an additional step. She's texted a coworker, told him to come in and actually talk to the guy to make sure everything was okay.
Did she serve the beers first or second?
Second.
So she's not even giving him hard liquor. She's concerned and serving him beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now she says he's drunk and being weird, and he keeps saying he has to put someone in his place. Now, this is the big evidence against her. Mm-hmm. Now, look, that is very... if you take out all tough talk by people who are buzzed at a bar, it will be like a library. There will be no speaking going on. Like, a bartender will tell you they hear people say crap like that all the time. It's a bar.
If you take out all tough talk and offensive talk, you have to get rid of almost everybody in the new Democratic Party.
Exactly. Okay, so now, again, four drinks over 4 hours and two visits. The last two were beers. She does think he's drunk, and she's a little worried. She texts a coworker, has him come in to actually talk to him to see if everything's okay. So then the guy tries to leave the bar. She tries to stop him from leaving the bar. Now, I don't know if this 27-year-old woman is supposed to overpower him, tackle him, put him in a stranglehold, because she surely would have gone to prison for that if she had assaulted him. She tries to actually stop him from leaving the bar. These are not facts
How'd she do that?
I mean, I guess they try to talk him out of it and say, no, you should stay. And you know, there's only a certain amount you can do.
Yeah.
We have free will in this country. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to leave places when you want to leave them. Okay, but again, if you say, all right, then she just gave up, well, that's just terrible, and then he went and shot all these people. No! She then left the bar to try to find him.
You gotta be kidding.
Okay, so she leaves the bar and starts driving around trying to find this guy. She's so concerned about it.
Oh my god.
Okay, so all right, okay, well, that's it. Well, she actually does find him. She successfully locates this guy after he leaves the house and finds the guy at the house that we're talking about where the mass shooting eventually goes on.
How did she know to go there? Did she know the guy personally?
I guess he was a regular. So he had been in there, and she knew
him.
Wow. She actually called him at one point her friend. Okay. So what does she do then? Okay, she finds the guy and then does nothing? No, she then calls 911.
Oh my gosh.
Calls 911 and reports that she has a friend in danger who is in possession of a gun and a knife. So she's gone like 10 steps past where she needs to go
on
this.
What was she supposed to do?
Right. Then they go, they leave the house, and Banks, the friend, drives Glass back to the bar. Lindsay Glass is the person I'm talking about. Then he, the person she initially texted to see if the situation was going to go okay, goes back to the house again. Then while he's on the way to the house, he flags down a uniformed county sheriff's deputy and tells him about the concerning behavior. At that point, they start getting ready to go over there, and that's when the shooting happens. Wow. And everyone responds to go for the shooter.
How are they responsible at all?
Right.
I mean, everything they possibly could, except make a citizen's arrest on the guy.
Exactly. I think legitimately, Lindsay Glass in this situation should be viewed as a hero. I mean, this is a person who went way above and beyond what a normal person would be thought of to. She's trying to stop someone she believes is dangerous, who she knows is armed and had too much to drink. And she's going out there trying to stop them at this house to make sure nothing bad happens.
Can I tell you something? She would be free today if she just didn't say anything and did nothing.
Yep. If he just left and she said, I didn't notice.
He had four drinks. Mm-hmm. But because she alerted a coworker and then left the bar to go track him down
and expressed that she had concerns.
Right. Because she was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Trying to do the right thing.
She's being penalized for it.
She's being penalized for it. If this is, you know, this when you look at the former Soviet Union and any places that have had dictatorial rule, your neighbors don't say anything. They don't report on anything. Mm-hmm. They never do anything. They look, they say they could see you being beaten to a bloody pulp, and they turn their eyes and they move on because they don't want to get involved. Why? Because it's always used against them. Here's this woman getting involved, trying to do the right thing as a human being. And what happens? Do you think the next bartender is going to do what she did?
Oh, God. I
not with this outcome.
Just hope to look the other way and not notice.
It was four drinks, two beers, and over 4 hours.
And his blood alcohol level was very high. However, four drinks over 4 hours almost doesn't change your blood alcohol level at all. You might have a 0.04, a 0.02. Like, you're not above the legal limit. I mean, this is basic, you know. I remember being in health class when I was a kid, and they said, you know, basically one drink per hour is what your body will burn off. So four drinks in 4 hours, to her, everything that she served them probably didn't change this guy's blood alcohol level at all. And let me give you this last piece. As this is all going on, this tragic shooting, she is brought in by deputies the night it's going on. In interviews with detectives, they commended her for her actions and the lives that she saved.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. And now she might be going to jail for a year for this. It is a disgrace.
So she hasn't been convicted yet?
No. No, and she shouldn't
She's
be.
Going to
the
trial.
The fact she's being charged at all is impossibly ridiculous.
I can't believe a Texas jury would convict her.
A year and a half after this happened, they're trying to bring her into jail for this? I mean, that is...
It's
inexplicable.
This is despicable. This is the death of common sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Just the death of common sense. You want a new world order? Here it is.
The death of personal responsibility. The death of common sense. I mean, looking at the facts here, what on earth do you expect a 25-year-old bartender to do in this situation? What is she supposed to do? She did 10 times more than I would even think of doing in that situation. I would not. I'm not going to this guy's house when he's drunk and
no
armed. A woman going there, you know, she did have one guy with her, but still, I would not even think of doing that. That is like, it's so far above and beyond. It's like saying, like, you know, you pass a homeless person in the street and you might give him some money. It's like the it's like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. He like brings her into that, brings the homeless guy in the house, gives him soup, tries to warm him up, gives him a place to stay, and he keeps dying, and he just can't do anything about it. Like, what the hell is she supposed to do? She did way more than I think any citizen would normally do.
I have to tell you, I would have just called 911. He walks out. We tried to get him to stay.
At call 911.
And there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Good luck.
And I mean, because
same thing would have happened. I would have worse, probably.
If you would have said, we got to go find this guy.
No.
You know what? How?
If that was my girlfriend or my wife who told me that, I would say no way or
no way,
honey. Seriously, mm-hmm. This could be
not
something.
Not in today's world.
Right, exactly.
Call the police.
Yeah, and like, look, they're going to say that like that's what she maybe should have done earlier. But I mean, you know, look, this is someone she knew was seemingly a regular. She tried to prevent. She did everything she could. And if she, let's just say she
tried
made,
to get somebody else. Hey, am I crazy? That's
right.
The first thing you do. The first thing you do. Because we have the normalcy bias and our brain is telling us it's fine. You're not sensing that. So the first thing we do is go, hey, is there something wrong with the reactor or is it just me?
Yeah.
Before Chernobyl blows.
Right. Yeah, right? Exactly.
You don't go, this thing's going to blow. You go, hey, I'm thinking, I mean, this sounds crazy because it's not supposed to blow, but do you think it might
possible?
Blow?
Yeah, and she's going to the point where she's like pouring a pitcher of water over the core to try to cool it down.
Yeah.
I mean, she goes way beyond.
Way beyond.
I mean, I just cannot believe in Texas, of all places, that they could look at that and use any level of common sense and
it's
try
despicable.
To say that she did anything other
Let's get
than
her attorney
act heroically.
On. Let's get her attorney on.
Yeah, all right.
I'd like to follow that case. Thank you so much. All right, thanks, Pat. All right, sponsor of this half hour is ZipRecruiter. If you are a small business owner, chances are your business is booming. How's your workload? Are you killing yourself? Could you use a new employee? You can't work 24/7. And if you don't have an HR person, if you're a small business person, nobody does. So if you don't have an HR person, how are you going to find that person to, you know, hire? ZipRecruiter.com/Beck is a special address just for you, and you can try it for free. The employers that use it find the qualified candidate, 4 out of 5, find the quality candidate in the first day of posting. So you're posting within a couple of hours, you've found the quality candidate. 4 out of 5 people.
It's amazing.
It's really amazing. This is a great system. It is not just a job website. They work with you to find the right person. They highlight the right candidates for you. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. So what is the justice that this prosecutor thinks is being served here? I mean, because she did everything she could. Even if she knew more, she knew that he had said, I'm going to go home and kill my family. She called 911.
Yep.
I mean,
she ran all around the town.
Where's the, what justice is this prosecutor looking for? That she served him 4 drinks? That sounds to me like a technicality because
those
4 drinks did not put him over the edge.
No, he was way over the edge anyway. And the four drinks did nothing. And remember, he showed up 4 hours later. So the period between the first drink and the time
where
the first two and the time where the shooting happens is probably 6 hours. Now, any 4 drinks in 6 hours is like literally like you are absolutely okay to drive with that level.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, for people
who
don't
drink. And 2 of them are
beer. Right. And 2 of them are beer, which, you know, depending. You know, so bottom line is I think that's the biggest question. If you want to get her on a technicality because she had the audacity to be honest and try to tell her friend, hey, I think someone might be drunk here. He's acting a little weird. Can you come in? And because they got her on a text, they're going to say, well, she knew he was drunk and she served him 2 drinks.
But she tried to stop him from leaving. She called 911.
Yep.
Her friend stopped a cop.
Yeah.
Tried to get him involved. She went to his house.
She brought in other people to help.
Right. I mean, she's done. So I'm trying to figure out what the case. What, you know, this. The law is supposed to be about justice.
Yeah.
You know, punishing people for doing wrong, but also blending that with mercy. You know, just because she served somebody she might have thought was drunk, look at everything she did around her. It's like she, you know, she was multitasking. This is not her only customer that day. What else was she supposed to do? It defies logic, and it defies the Republic of Texas, I think. Okay, I want to talk to you a little bit about financing and whether you're looking to buy a new home or you are looking to refi and consolidate. Now is the time to do it. Now is the time to do it. Please get your financial house in order. American Financing is there to help you with whatever it is that you're looking to do with financing. They are a family-owned national mortgage banker with salary-based mortgage consultants. They're known for their custom low-rate home loans and their fast closings. They have the fastest in the industry. Plus, they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. They have no upfront fees or commissions involved. If you do a consolidation loan, you could save yourself up to $1,000 a month. That's 12 grand a year. Interest rates, at least with credit cards, are going to go higher. Please, AmericanFinancing.net. Take care of yourself now. 800-906-2440 or AmericanFinancing.net.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It doesn't seem like anyone can really define what is happening on the right. We have media sources that want to define it a certain way, that it's all just driven by Nazi ideology. Then they completely, refuse to look at what's happening, the civil war in the Democratic Party, which is fueled in many ways by socialism and, in some cases, communism. So what is the new right? Is there a new right? What does Donald Trump mean to the right? What's happening? One guy, Michael Malice, says he knows what it is. He's put it together in a book, The New Right. We go there in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Diabetes is a growing public health challenge. One in three adults in the United States has pre-diabetes, but 90% of those with pre-diabetes have no idea how they've gotten it. Now, type 2 diabetes, influenced by genetics, it's not just lifestyle and weight. Type 2 is a condition that typically develops as we get older, and it is caused by or helped along by many factors: diet, lack of proper exercise, weight gain, but it's also our genes. 23andMe's Type 2 Diabetes Report offers insights into your genetic likelihood of developing type 2 diabetes and empowers you with personal results and tools that may help you prevent this disease from happening in your life. 23andMe, the scientists have worked on years and years of research, and they have gathered these insights and data from over, well, I think it's like 2.5 million customers who consented to participate in their research to help others, and it can help you. 23andMe's Health and Ancestry Service Kit. Explore 125 plus personalized genetic reports that may reveal the link between your DNA, your health, your traits, and your chances of developing certain diseases. Do it now. Order your 23andMe Health and Ancestry Service Kit at 23andme.com. That's the number 23andme.com/Beck. On a better day, you might want to wait a little bit longer, as I'm not sure Michael Malice is the guy who's going to deliver the message that we're like, oh, well, everything's going to be sunshine and lollipops soon, because he does not believe that politics is going to change. It's going to remain nasty in the future. His new book is The New Right. Michael Malice, he is also the author of, what is the Kim Jong-il book that we always talk about? Dear Leader. And he's classic. Great. He's funny, and he's a friend of the program. Welcome, Michael Malice. How are you, sir?
Good morning. It is not sunny here in Brooklyn. I can assure you that.
Yes, I bet. I bet. Okay, so Michael, I started reading. I haven't finished it, but I've started reading it, and I've kind of picked through it, and I'm not sure I agree with you. So I want you to set it out from the beginning. Tell me what you are defining the new right as.
Okay, I got very kind of technical with the definition. I define the new right as a loosely connected group of individuals united by their opposition to progressivism, which they perceive to be a thinly veiled religion dedicated to egalitarian principles and intent on world domination via globalist hegemony.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense.
I think that does capture.
There's a lot of that. I mean, it's the loosely connected part, I think, is really important there, because there are a lot of different reasons why they oppose it. And
correct.
But yeah, I think that's largely
so
true.
That would include people like identitarians, which I think their solutions are not good, but I think their complaints are valid. And that's the problem. A lot of these
not
groups.
Not all of them, obviously.
Not all of them. No, not all of them.
Let's not make any blanket statements here.
Yeah, we should probably. I'm sorry. I was thinking we were living in a reasonable world still. When people feel like the nation, whatever nation they live in, I mean, this is happening all over the world, that their nation is being destroyed by globalism. And not a globalism of, hey, let's just buy products from each other. A globalism that says your country is valueless. It doesn't. It's no different than anything else. I'm sorry, Italy. Stop talking about spaghetti. You know, you're not special. That is a driver for a lot of people that feel like we're losing the things that I'm proud of my country.
And what I talk about in the book is, how did we get to this point? So in a broader sense, the new right can be regarded as the unorthodox right wing. And these are the people and types who are basically driven out of the mainstream. How do we get to the point where this, what you and many other people are fighting, is taking place all over the world? And it's not just Italy, you know, stop talking about spaghetti, and Italy doesn't matter. It's that you individually don't matter.
Yes.
Anywhere you go. And not only that, which I discuss, if you talk about video games, if you talk about movies, if you talk about places that don't exist and escaping the earth, even there, these ideas have to be promulgated by the what I call the evangelical left. So what I criticize conservatives about, and let me just take a step back, because a lot of people think, oh, if you criticize conservatives, you must be an AOC supporter. That's not how it works. Conservatives, I think, are a little naive about the nature of who they're opposing. They think there's room to reason with these people, that they're like journalists are sloppy or making mistakes. And the point I demonstrate is these so-called mistakes have been made the same exact way for over 100 years. Mm-hmm. So if you keep making the same mistake in the same exact way, at what point does it become a pattern and a decision?
So, Michael, let me go a step deeper with the new right, because there is the alt-right, which is an alternative to the right, and that is they are just as big government and socialists. Many of them are just nationalists, but they don't believe in the Bill of Rights. They don't believe in the Constitution. You know, these neo-Nazis. You know, you listen to Richard Spencer, and that's exactly what he's saying. No, I don't believe in the Bill of Rights. No, I'm for universal health care. So he is a national socialist. So how do you divide those two?
Yeah, I was in Charlottesville, and I talk about that in my book, and I'm Jewish, and I'm an immigrant. And, you know, I was not invited to some of the parties for obvious reasons. So what the progressives would love to have is the idea that you and I and Stu, we're all neo-Nazis simply because we disagree with them. Mm-hmm. And it's a very useful technique for them, and here's how their logic works. Racism has no place in civilized society. Okay, we can get on board with that. Mm-hmm. Anyone who disagrees with me is a racist. Therefore, anyone who disagrees with me has no place in civilized society. One of the things I point out in this book, which will drive them crazy, is more white nationalists and white supremacists fought the Nazis than urban feminists during World War II. So to have everyone in this big, giant box is very convenient for them. And again, this happens at the university level, and it happens at the media level. And one of the things I discuss, which I don't think conservatives really have an answer for, how is it that they so dominate the media and the universities? And government becomes a consequence. Andrew Breitbart, who I'm sure you have very kind things to say about, made that realization that politics is downstream from culture. Mm-hmm. And when so much of conservative thought is about Washington, my point in this book is, if you're dealing with it at the Washington level, you've already lost.
Yes.
Because that's the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree with that analysis. I mean, yeah, it is a huge problem, I think, for whatever is left of the conservative movement or whatever part of it is real anymore. So are you saying, Michael, that you would, that the new right is a replacement for the old right, or is it just a new branch of what we used to kind of look at as the conservative movement in general?
I would think the new right is in many ways opposed to the conservative movement. And I talk about the past conservative movement, and I talk about how Buckley and the National Review have for decades, you know, read people out of the movement, you know, driven them from a respectable society, and are using tactics that, you know, very leftist tactics. And that's no surprise, because they have their roots in literal, like, Trotskyist communists. James Burnham, you know, we're going old school here, was one of the original National Review people. He was friends with Trotsky, and so on and so forth. So I discuss how, and it happens now, you have the Bill Kristol types and so on and so forth,
sure,
who would love to drive everyone out of the movement and off the face of the earth. And, you know, there's something else. Go ahead.
He's a progressive Republican. I mean, that's the thing that the right refuses to look at, is that the progressive movement came from Theodore Roosevelt. I mean, you know, he didn't invent it, but he was the one who first really popularized it. And it was the progressive party that he started, and both sides adopted it. Both sides were progressive.
Glenn, you and I, another time I was on, you and I were bonding over our hatred of Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
Right. Conservatives at their best are about studying history and applying those lessons to today.
Correct.
So this conservative idea that it's only been recently that progressivism has taken place in America, I debunk that in this book, mm-hmm, because as you and I know, Woodrow Wilson is 100 years ago, and he was far more progressive than anyone out there today. He really was messianic and said explicitly that he was sent here by God to save the world and to save us from ourselves. It's a very disturbing approach. So the idea that it's only been since the 60s that this has been going on is false. And I especially talk about in context of universities. And I talk about how, you know, since the 1890s, people came over from Germany with the intent of creating an elite to control and dominate American culture. And it's been going on for over 100 years. This is not a recent phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Johns Hopkins University was founded. It was started. It was the first progressive university meant to take what was being taught in Heidelberg and bring it here to the United States. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time.
And the other key thing to understand is Wilson and many of these types have their roots in the social gospel. And this idea is that instead of saving an individual soul, it is a nation that has to be saved.
Correct.
And purified from sin. And when that is your approach to a country, that means there is no room anywhere for people to have sinful, i.e. incorrect, i.e. not progressive views. And that is why there's such, in a sense, jihadis.
So
when
how
it
do
comes
you
to so, anyone that they don't like?
So how do you separate out on the new right? How do you separate those people who don't like progressive policies, but seem to accept it, you know, from themselves? Where is the line, you know, because there's a lot of people right now on the right that are falling into the trap of progressivism, and it's my way or the highway, and they're not really basing anything in the Constitution and Bill of Rights.
Sure. I mean, you could be a socialist and not be, or a Marxist and not be a progressive, and so on and so forth. And many of them are very, very pro big government, in a sense that you and I would find anathema and horrible. And I engaged with them in this book. I sat down with these identity, Jared Taylor, who's a big, you know, race realist, and some Nazis I talked to. And I think it's important to air out these ideas and engage them and fight them, because otherwise the accusations of, well, you're making your fellow traveling with these types. It's like, well, no, I'm showing you, I'm doing a better job of arguing with them than you are, because I'm showing where their ideas are wrong instead of just dismissing them. And what happens is, when you drive ideas underground, young kids who want to upset people and be trolls and be edgy and cool, they are drawn to it. It's like telling kids, don't smoke cigarettes. You know, that'll upset me. It's like, oh, yeah, where can I get some Camels? So this is happening in current culture, and they don't even realize what they're doing. And I'm in some way putting a stop to it.
So, okay. So, Michael, we're talking to Michael Malice, the author of the new book, The New Right, A Journey into the Fringe of American Politics. I'm going to take a 1 minute break, and then I want to come back, and I want you to kind of, can you cut up the right and tell me all of the little pieces that are involved and where the new right fits in all of this when we come back? Goldline has the $5 Liberty coin. Now, the $5 Liberty coin is really, really special in American history. It was United States' official legal tender. It was struck by the United States Mint from 1866 to 1908 at the Mother Mint in Philadelphia, Carson City, Denver, New Orleans, and what's called the Granite Lady in San Francisco. The ones I'm holding here were struck in 1881. These are amazing. Now, this coin, it tells the story of American history. It has the 13 stars on it. It has Columbia on the front, the bald eagle on the back. Our motto, In God We Trust, is on there back in the 1800s. What's more important, I think, is these were the coins that survived the United States Gold Reserve Act of 1934. Remember when the Federal Reserve pulled in all the gold coins and all the gold? These survived. You could own these. 85 years later, the customers now can own these legacy gold coins. So if you want a legacy coin, and these are not, you know, mint perfect, these were circulated, which to me is important, because you're not paying for the perfect gold coin, because what you want is the pure gold in this, and the, you know, best that you can guarantee that they're not going anyplace, that you own them because they're collector's items. These are the kind of coins that I own. Call 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Read their important information. Find out if gold or silver is right for you. I don't know if you've seen the price of gold, but now would be the time to get in, because price of gold is going up because of the trade war that we're in. So GOLDLINE, go there now. They're waiting for your phone call at 866-GOLDLINE, 866-GOLDLINE. Read their important risk information and ask them about the gold Liberty coins now at goldline.com. 10 seconds, station ID. So, Michael, how do you chop up the right and separate people who are anarchists? I mean, I think you're an anarchist. Aren't you a self-described anarchist?
Absolutely. I wave that black flag proudly.
So the ones that want to just have chaos, you don't want to have chaos in the streets.
Chaos in the streets is a function of government, because streets are owned by the government.
Okay.
There you go.
So you don't have chaos in your house.
That's true.
So how do you separate?
Oh, you haven't seen my house, Michael. Sometimes there is chaos. I have two small children.
Yeah. Wait until you have teenagers. Oh, it's fun. I'm glad to be in the riots in the street every night. But Michael, explain to me, like, where do we fit in the right? Are we part of the new right? I'm talking about me personally.
Yeah, I understand. Do you agree with that definition? Do you regard progressivism as a thinly veiled religion dedicated to world domination?
Yes.
Then, yeah, you're do you think that it's a problem that organizations like National Review have for decades been kicking people out of politics for the sake of, you know, people on the left?
Yes.
Yeah. And if you regard, here's how the real litmus test for the new right, if you unambiguously regard Woodrow Wilson as by far the most evil man to be president, I think that's a good litmus test. And that I know.
Okay, so try this on for size. You know who agrees with you?
Who?
Samantha Bee. When I talked to her about a year and a half ago, she went off. She was like, I know you hate Woodrow Wilson. Her and her producer. I know you hate Woodrow Wilson.
He's a racist.
What?
She hates him because he's a racist. She doesn't hate him for his progressivism.
I'm not sure. We talked a lot about, well, we did talk about a lot about eugenics. So I guess, probably racism. Probably.
Well, the other thing that's important about Woodrow Wilson is it's not a coincidence that he was a college university professor, president of Princeton, before he became president. And I talk in this book extensively about the universities and how they're the real problem. And this is something that conservatives are kind of aware of, and they talk about, you know, things going on campus. And my point is the rot goes far deeper than kids acting out. I mean, these kids are being trained in this way.
Oh, I know.
And the chickens are coming home to roots.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think a lot of conservatives do, because historically, you know, and this is, I talk in the book, is, you know, this was the idea of my kid's the first one to go to college. It's this middle class aspiration. And it was a great, great thing. And now people are coming to realize, thankfully, that you have this beautiful young 18-year-old girl going to school, and 4 years later she comes home as a swamp walrus, and you can't even have conversations with each other over dinner.
I love you.
Swamp walrus.
But you know what, Michael? Even in my home, this is probably the biggest argument we have in my home with me and Tanya, my wife. She says kids have got to go to college. And I'm like, over my dead body. And she's like, I'm willing to kill you. But it is. I mean, I cannot find a reason to fund the swamp walrus training for my kids. More with Michael in a minute.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
You know, there's many days that I hate my job. Many days. And it never, I shouldn't say never. Many times when I'm on the air telling you stuff that I don't want to tell you,
right.
I hate my job. Mm-hmm. And when I think about, oh, I've got to go look at the news again, I hate my job. The one thing that makes it easy is the X chair. I would say Stu, but no. Uh-uh. I'd rather hang out with my teenagers.
I make life much worse for you.
Yes, you do.
The X chair does not.
Yes. X chair has, it's just a great chair, has a billion different adjustments. I don't think there's... Have you ever sat in a chair that has this many adjustments?
No, definitely not.
I mean, like, not
you can
even
customize
those...
it to any body shape. Even if you have a changing body shape, like me and you, a lot of times, bigger, right. smaller, you can adjust it there too. It's great.
It's X Chair. Try it now. $100 off. Go to xchairbeck.com. That's xchairbeck.com. Or you can call 1-844 X Chair. The X Chair comes with a 30-day, no questions asked guarantee of complete satisfaction. So go to xchairbeck.com and use the promo code XWheels. You'll receive a free set of the new X wheels, which are just really amazing. And they'll fit right on the bottom of your X chair, xchairbeck.com. We're going to talk about the devastating effects of this trade war coming up in just a second. Right now, we're talking to the author of the book, The New Right, Michael Malice. He's a friend of the program, been on several times. Very funny, very, very insightful. Michael, I want to go back to your definition of who fits in the alt-right. And
the new right.
The new right. Because the new right could include... well, it does include, I would imagine, that would include people like Alex Jones. And Alex and I disagree on 98% of things, I think. However, we do agree probably on your definition, but that is more of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's good to destroy, but a conservative conserves and doesn't want to destroy the good things that remain. And I'm more about building a new future than destroying.
Sure. I think the 2% you and Alex would agree upon is probably the most important 2%, and which I discuss at length, which is we are being lied to, that we are have been lied to for a very long time. And what is the nature of this narrative that's being constructed in front of us?
But when we even get to that 2%, what we're being lied to, I mean, I don't think everything is a false flag. He does.
I agree with you completely. What I meant by that 2% is not what you're being lied to about.
Okay.
Is that this mechanism is being done intentionally,
okay,
and systemically and pervasively. That this isn't a coincidence or an accident. And once people start looking, and that's the problem. And that's the problem I grapple with in the book, because once you take that one red pill, like in the Matrix, and you see, okay, I'm being lied to, you take one red pill, not the whole bottle. Because once
right.
you start thinking more and more things are lies, you get to the point to full-blown Holocaust denial, because everything is a lie.
Correct.
So that is something that I address and grapple with. What do you do once you realize that the media is manipulative and lying, but there comes a point where you're like, whoa, now I've gone too far.
I got it. That's very good.
Really interesting. I mean, the book is worth it just for, I think, the creation of a potential TV series of Michael Malice Talks to the Nazis, which is something I would absolutely watch.
I would too.
That would be fantastic.
I would too.
I mean, that would just be riveting television. But I wanted to ask you, Michael, so when you, because it's interesting looking at the book and the way you talk about these groups, and you're describing, I think, something real that is happening right now. Do you see this as an endorsement? Do you see this as a warning? Or do you just see this as, hey, everybody, wake up. This is what's happening right now.
First of all, I wrote a book to be entertaining. I think if you're writing a book about politics and you get people to laugh and be engaged and you could read on the beach or in the bathroom, you've accomplished something. That's number one.
Sure.
Number two is it's the kind of thing where, you know, if someone is having an affair and the wife looks the other way, this book is, you can't pretend you don't know anymore. This book is exposing what is going on and forcing people to confront the very dark realities of our politics and our cultural war in a way that I think is going to make some people uncomfortable, because it's really scary to realize just how totalitarian the opposition is. And let me use an example. The argument with, you know, they block people from Twitter, from PayPal, right? They say, go make your own network if you don't like it. It's private property. And Glenn Beck said, all right, I made the Blaze. And now if they had their druthers, they would drive the Blaze out of business.
Yes.
So it's a lie. So I also talk about the techniques that the evangelical left uses to further their control of American and world domination. Because it's not about, you know, if you're arguing about, you know, transgender bathrooms or, you know, immigration from Muslim countries, this is a distraction. As soon as that issue is done, they're going to find something else, because it's always about furthering their power.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem is people think that they're dealing with honest brokers, and they're
right.
not. They're not honest brokers.
Because it is a barely disguised religion, once you think of yourself as saved, then you are allowed to do anything you want, because you're doing it in the service of what you perceive to be the good. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis, who I'm sure you're a fan of, mm-hmm. who's a great, great philosopher, I have a quote from him in the book where he says, I'd rather be under the control of people who are corrupt than a bit moral busybody, because the corrupt person will at least sleep at night, whereas the busybody will never tire because he's fueled by his own self-righteous conscience. And that is something people need to understand. This is a totalitarian faith for these types, and they will never let you rest.
Michael, thank you so much for your hard work, and thank you for being on the program. We'll talk again. The name of the book is The New Right, A Journey into the Fringe of American Politics by Michael Malice, a great, great writer that you really do enjoy reading his books. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
You bet. God bless. Some very important news on the Dow, and also what's happening with China with the trade bill and farmers. God bless you, man. We are praying for you. All right. Let me tell you about LifeLock. According to a recent study, global malware, the volume has risen for the third straight year. It's now reached 206.4 million attacks in 2018. That's 1 year. And in that 1 year, it's an 11% year-over-year increase. We are all going to be hacked. Stu, it just happened to you.
Oh, yeah. I had a... I don't know about that. I may have had a wonderful night in Miami last week.
You're right.
I don't remember it at all, but someone went to a smoker's club, mm-hmm. spent $448 there, which is interesting because I don't smoke. And then they parked for $40 at a stadium and went to go see some Hard and Loud or something festival.
Mm.
And the thing is, they got those tickets for a bargain basement price of $7,282. Which I felt like I would have remembered that purchase,
right.
But no. I had to get up, credit card shut down, that whole situation, and it can be a nightmare to deal with.
It's not if you have LifeLock. Mm-hmm. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web, somebody opening up a new account in your name, and if they detect your information is being used, they send you an alert, but then that's not where they stop. They just send you an alert, hey, are you doing this? When you say no, they have a person here in the country that this is all they do. This whole team, it's a U.S.-based restoration specialist team, and that's what they do is restore your good name, credit, and your information, make sure it's all secure. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions in all businesses, but LifeLock can uncover the threats that you might miss on your own. Join now and get 10% off your first year by using promo code BECK. That's 1-800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK, promo code BECK, or you can go to lifelock.com and use the promo code BECK, get 10% off, or just call them now at 1-800-LIFELOCK, promo code BECK. Dan Eikenson is with us. He's the director of trade policy studies at the Cato Institute, and I wanted to bring him on because I'm very concerned about what this trade war is leading us to, and Dan is here to explain. Welcome to the program, Dan. How deep in the madness are we here with this trade war with China?
Well, we are on the verge of tariffing each other's products out of existence. I mean, the Trump administration has announced that it will extend tariffs on all products by next month if the deal is not reached. The Chinese are already close to tariffing all of our products. And my concern is that this can spiral out of control without even if there's some sense to this, and even if there's some plan to try to pull back and reach some deal, and this is all negotiating tactics, it could spiral out of control. There's a lot of politics at play, a lot of...
What does that mean, spiral out of control? To what?
So right now, the United States exports about $120, $130 billion a year, U.S. exporters, to China, but we have companies there that generate revenues of about $500 billion. And they are being compelled, I think, by the Trump administration to reconsider where they're investing. So they may shift their supply chains. They may try to bring them home. What's going to happen is that the costs of production for U.S. businesses are going to rise dramatically. It's going to cause profits to shrink. Revenues for U.S. exporters are going to shrink. That's going to also put downward pressure on profits. If businesses don't have profits, they can't invest and they can't hire. We'll likely see some economic contraction, and we will likely see the global economy kind of breaking up, bifurcating into two segments, two blocks, those that fall within sort of China's ambit and those that we continue to woo. And boy, it's hard to woo countries nowadays, considering how we've poked many of them in the eyes with respect to our trading policies.
So, if you look at the cycle that leads to war, usually the last thing before actual war happens is a trade war. This is the worst one I think I've seen in my lifetime, at least the one that I can remember. And I'm not torn on Mexico or Europe or Canada. Wrong. However, China has really bad practices, and they are, I think, are the biggest enemy of not America, but of freedom of mankind out there. And while I don't like the tariffs I also don't like really doing a lot of business with China because they're very bad actors.
Certainly the China of 2019 is very different than the China of, say, 2001, when it
right.
sort of joined the global economy and joined the World Trade Organization. It was a poor country at the time that was trying to make amends for a lot of bad economic policies, bad social policies. And there was hope that China would become more like us and open up and capitalism would prevail. And now they have a president who's president for life. He has he surveils his population. He exports surveillance equipment around the world. He's got concentration camps. And so, yes, we need to be a little bit more skeptical of China. But at the same time, we don't want this to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. The Chinese people, I think, will suffer from, if we turn our backs on each other. And it's not them. It's a regime that might be under pressure from this trade war, which is likely to spark, inspire nationalism as the economy yeah. starts to go south in China. But ultimately, I think Chinese people are peace-loving and would like to have mutually beneficial relations.
Yeah, we all are that way. Generally speaking, I think we're all that way. Sometimes politics and politicians are not that way, but I think generally speaking, the average person on Earth is just like, I just want to be left alone, man.
Right.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, even if this trade war were to end and the Chinese were to accept all of the Trump administration's demands, and many of those demands, I think, are legitimate, and China's doing certain things that it shouldn't be doing. They need to abide by the commitments that they have made. In some areas where the president is pushing for the Chinese to buy more U.S. products, I don't think that is necessary. China's not doing anything wrong there. But if they were to agree to everything, we would still have the problem that the United States is the technologically preeminent economy in the world, and China wants to get there. And there are first mover advantages to being, to being dominant in a particular technology that has military and security applications. So there's going to be this. I'm concerned that there's going to be this sort of Cold War dynamic that plays out, because we're going to want to prevent them from getting there. They're going to do it whatever it takes to get there to the technological fore, and that spells a lot of that spells trouble for me.
Dan, there's a couple of new studies out. One says that the washers and dryers that they put tariffs on added $200 of cost to a washer dryer set, plus it's cost over $800,000 per job that it created.
Same with steel, $900,000 per job.
Yeah, and it seems to be very consistent. Also, they're now saying that the tariffs, if implemented as threatened, would now overwhelm the entire benefit of the tax bill that was passed in 2017. Are those line up with what you see going on? Are those accurate numbers?
I've seen those studies, and I don't doubt them. The thing is, so far, up until this last weekend when this thing really erupted, there were tariffs in place, and certain sectors, steel using industries and certain manufacturers were complaining about the tariffs. But by and large, the economy didn't seem to be so adversely affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Except for the farmers. Farmers are dying.
The farmers are in bad shape. But they've been retaliated against. But interestingly, they're among the most patriotic Americans. And they seem to think, look, there's a bigger issue here. We're willing to take it on the chin. This is an existential battle. And so they're willing to take it. But Trump realizes that they can't take it for very long. And so he's directed subsidies to farmers who are in bad shape. And I think because the economy has generally been doing so well, it's masked some of the costs. But we're running out of rope, we're past the peak of the business cycle, and we're going to start to feel this. U.S. businesses' costs are going to rise. U.S. cost of living for families is going to increase, and it's going to be hard to undo that. We have to reestablish all sorts of business relationships around the world in order to compensate for what is lost in this relationship.
So can you tell me, in a minute, are you worried at all about the Chinese selling our treasuries? I mean, they've tried that, and it actually seemed to have backfired on them.
Yeah. I don't worry about that at all. They own our debt. I mean, we have them over a barrel.
Yeah.
We could always default on the debt, but that's not something I would recommend.
Right.
But they buy our debt because it's a good investment for them.
Right.
It's they need to, and particularly since we're scrutinizing all of their investments, you know, their direct investments in the United States so rigorously now, they don't have many choices to buy dollar-denominated assets other than to buy debt. And they can buy equities, but I think it's a myth that we're threatened by the fact that China owns all the debt, the U.S. debt. But the thing is, it speaks to a bigger problem. That is that we have this debt. And why do we have this debt? Because Congress spends too much money.
Right.
We need to address that problem, and then we never have to worry about this fake concern.
Dan Eikenson, thank you so much. I really appreciate the update. We'll talk again as you continue to follow this. Appreciate it. From the Cato Institute, Dan Eikenson. Back in just a second.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, so we have some good news about the Supreme Court. Looks like Kavanaugh voted with the liberals again. It's just what I wanted, a Supreme Court justice. Somebody would vote for with the liberals. Not look at the Constitution. Oh, Kavanaugh and John Roberts. We begin there in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, people put things that they want to give away all the time at the curb, you know, but you don't. You don't put, whatever your grandmother gave you at the curb, do you? You don't, I'm just going to leave. Well, now wait a minute. I was going to say, you don't want to leave your kids by the curb, but now that they're teenagers, I wonder if anyone would take them. Anyway, right now, I'd like to remind you that the curb in today's world is public Wi-Fi. Yes, it's password protected. No, it doesn't make a difference. What you need is a secure VPN. Norton Secure VPN, that's a virtual private network. It encrypts all of your connections, even on public Wi-Fi, so the information you send and receive is safe from cyber criminals who want to steal your private information. It's also safe from people like Facebook. Oh, can't follow me anymore, Facebook. Sucks to be you. I've got a Norton Secure VPN. Norton.com/VPN. Protection starts at about $333 a month. Terms do apply. You sign up for the year and you're going to get a $333 a month, and it's well worth it. Just go to Norton.com/VPN. That's Norton.com/VPN. I am so angry. I could go to the John Roberts anger, or I could go, I'm going on vacation later this week, and I'm getting sick.
You're missing it. That's perfect, because then you won't miss any shows. Like, if you were sick while you were working, you might miss a couple shows. This way, you won't miss any shows, and, you know, you can be sick and recover and come back strong after the week.
My body's supposed to work for me. It's not working for me. I don't know who it's working for, but it's not working for me.
You know what? The Russians. That's what it's working for. There is collusion between Russia.
Exactly right.
And your body.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about John Roberts, who we all adore. Just adore.
Pick's worked out really well.
Yeah.
Really well.
And
so
the Kavanaugh pick looks like that's working out really well.
That one's scaring me. I mean, it's still early. We tap the brakes a little bit as you, because I feel like Thelma and Louise, I'm ready to tap on the gas and just go off the edge of the cliff. Mm. You tap the brakes a little bit and hope that maybe this isn't what it looks like it is, which is him moving.
Siding more often.
With John Roberts than the Clarence Thomases of the world.
It's our side. It's always.
We always screw this up.
We screw this up every single time.
I really hope it doesn't happen with Kavanaugh. And I'm surprised, especially, that it would happen this quickly with Kavanaugh, given the way he went in there.
When
it was the only reason he's a Supreme Court justice is because of conservatives.
But he is doing what he believes is right.
And he should.
Yeah, he should.
But he should just believe other things are right.
Yes, he should believe that the Constitution is correct. Now, they ruled against Apple. Apple is in real trouble. Between China, I mean, everything is coming from China for Apple. What are they going to do?
Yeah, if this really goes on it would be a big deal for Apple.
Apple products will go through the roof in price Where are they going to move their facilities?
It's a lot, not just Apple. A lot of technology companies would have to deal with that. Yeah. It would be
which
a
is
huge
bad.
Impact. Yeah, it's bad because, you know, like, I don't like getting taxed on things. You
know, it's bad for innovation as well.
Yeah, it is. And what happens, there's a couple things that happen. The only people who can actually win in a trade war are third parties. So a country like India, for example, could benefit off of some of this in theory because they would transfer, you know, if it lasted long enough, they might abandon China and go to a place like India, which is even lower cost, or Bangladesh, which is lower than them, and find a place where they can produce. So it could theoretically help from that perspective. But number one, do we put new tariffs on them once they start having the production? And number two, you know, a lot of those supply lines are not as well developed as China is. The reason why companies like China is not because they love Chinese communism. It's because they have a very well-developed supply chain and process to get these things done reliably.
Yeah, because they don't mind using people to grease the blocks of the blocks in the pyramid.
Certainly not going to argue for China as a good, solid nation.
Yeah,
though I will say that many of the best jobs in China are the jobs that we consider to be slave labor because they pay them so little. You know, it is a...
And I don't mind, honestly. There's a difference between slave labor and labor that costs a lot less than does in America.
Right.
I mean, cost of living in...
It's more than just money, too. I mean, it's the conditions. It's the way people are treated generally.
Right. In China, it is many times slave labor. It's bad over there. And I don't like it. And now, let me go back to Apple. So yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that the Apple App Store is a monopoly. Now... No, it's not. However, if you want to be in the Apple App Store, you know, it's the place to be. It is the place to be. It is the high rent, you know, shopping mall. It is where people get their apps. Now, you get your apps elsewhere. It's just that the Apple App Store is the easiest and the one that everybody uses. Now, they're saying that the reason why this is coming to play, and I know this to be true for ourselves. If you sell something on Amazon, you sell something on Apple, especially with Apple, they take 30% of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just 30%.
Everything you sell on. That's why, like, if you go to try to buy something on Amazon on the app, certain, like, if you want to buy something from Audible and, like, download a book, you can't do it there. You have to buy it on the website and then have it delivered to your app. So
which is a giant pain in the ass.
It's a giant pain, and it's because they don't want to give 30% of everything they sell to Apple.
Correct.
It's a real problem for anybody doing business through there. And you know, you deal with it because they make the rules.
But you have to look at it and say, is it worth 30%? I mean, I know if we put, you know, the subscription for the Blaze in the Apple iStore, or we put it up on Amazon, we would have more people subscribe because I know I don't buy stuff if it's not on Apple or Amazon.
Yeah, it's too much of a hassle.
Oh, it's just like, you want what now? What? You want the, I don't know what that number is. I heisted that credit card years ago. I don't know where that is. You know what I mean? Yeah. I give up so easily when it's not, you know, either in Amazon or Apple. And I think that might be worth the 30%. I don't know. We haven't done it because we don't think it's worth it. But, you know, what are you going to do? So Kavanaugh yesterday, he sided with the liberals on this. And so they are going out against Apple. And it's hard because I think Apple is building a monopoly. So is Amazon, so is Google, and so is Facebook. These guys are going to shut everybody else out. Can a company choose to say, I'm sorry, I'm going to take 30%. I created the platform. Everybody's here because it's Apple. I'm going to charge you 30%. You don't like it, go someplace else.
Yeah. Absolutely can. And that's, you know, that's one of the arguments with the whole China situation. One of the big issues with that as far as trade goes is a lot of times the Chinese government will say, hey, you can sell your technology to our billion plus people. However, if you're going to use that technology here and you're going to use our market, you have to give us the technology.
Right.
Now, that is a completely unfair law, and I would fight against it with everything I have.
But
however,
they have
the sovereignty to make that law,
right,
just like we do.
And you also have the sovereignty as Apple or anybody else to go,
screw it.
No. I'm not going to do that.
No, I'd rather sell somewhere else. And,
right,
and I'm going to skip the Chinese market.
Right.
And, you know, that is, of course, the right. I they should change the rules. But that is a different story, and it's the same thing with Apple. Like, I think Apple, 30% is pretty freaking excessive.
That's crazy.
It's really excessive. However, you know, they have, this is their product. They made it. They get to charge what they want for it. That's the free market.
So let me just kind of change subjects. This weekend on our podcast, Mike Lee is going to be on. Now, Mike Lee, I think I've heard him say some really bad things about people, like, I don't know, I personally don't necessarily always get along with them.
Okay, that's about as hardcore as it goes.
Yeah, that's Mike Lee, that extremist. He is just, he is the, one of the nicest guys. He will never say anything bad about anybody. So I'm in the middle of this podcast, and I ask him about two people. I ask him about Donald Trump, which, remember, he was very anti-Donald Trump. So I had no idea where he was going to go on this. And I'll play that for you in a minute. It was as amazing as this one. Now, listen, I want to play when I asked him about John Roberts. I've never seen Mike. This is Mike Lee completely unhinged.
This is a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, this is Mike Lee. I mean, everybody in the control room, everybody who had a monitor while we were recording this, everybody went, oh my gosh, listen to what he's saying. This is Mike Lee unhinged on John
Roberts. It's hard for me to draw the line between him and other members of the court who have also made decisions that I would consider wrong.
But if we don't start impeaching people, I mean, I don't think the impeachment process, especially for the Supreme Court, was meant to be as hard as it is. Look,
it's probably true.
You never hear about impeachment for judges. When these judges go offline, you know, I'd like, quite honestly, there's several people in the Senate and the House that I wouldn't mind impeaching because you are violating your oath. You are to protect the Constitution against all foreign and domestic enemies. I see people making decisions all the time that is absolutely unconstitutional. But when you have a sitting judge and it is revealed the horse trading that went on, that's just another political house now.
It's wrong. And that's one of the things that differentiates that from just other members of the court, mm-hmm, with whom I sometimes disagree in their interpretation of the statute or the constitutional provision before them. In this instance, we now have evidence. I widely suspected at the time, wrote,
right,
and did extensive media interviews about it at the time, that something had gone terribly wrong. I wasn't,
correct,
sure what it was.
But now we know.
But now we know.
Right. So you can't say, well, this is a difference of opinion, or maybe we now know. Shouldn't he be impeached?
Perhaps he should. I have never given serious consideration to that until this very moment. It's something worth considering, except for the fact that it'll never happen. I mean, first of all,
okay, you got to stop. This is the wrong clip. This is after he blew his stack, and I'm so frustrated. This is after, because I said to him, I think Justice Roberts should be impeached.
Yeah, because you made a long case about it, and he sat there perfectly still and silent.
And then he leaned into the table.
Yeah, you could hear the very end of it at the beginning of that clip.
And you're like, whoa.
Yeah, you have to hear this podcast. Because, I mean, Mike Lee's just great on everything. He's so smart, and he's a guy who's so principled. And, you know, he's one of the very few in Washington that I truly admire. But, listening to him there, I was surprised. Because, in a way, we've said this before. We've had this conversation off the air. That because of the John Roberts, the way he dealt with Obamacare, which has now been reported widely and has not really been disagreed with at all by anyone in the court, which is he basically did agree with the conservative side to overrule Obamacare and then started deciding I don't know, it's a big move. I'm going to go over to the other side of the aisle and try to convince some of the liberals to come with me in the majority and change my, essentially horse trading,
mm-hmm,
and then traded the Medicare decision, which he was initially on the opposite side of that one too, and flip-flop them so he could basically keep Obamacare in effect, which is, again, your job as a Supreme Court justice is to go in there and rule on whether you believe something is constitutional or not, period.
It's not a political body.
Right. You're not supposed to be, making deals. Like, that's not right. The way it's supposed to work. And because he did that, we were talking about, I don't know, do you impeach this guy? And I remember having that conversation with you. And as you were pitching it to Mike Lee, and he's sitting there just silent, just like waiting for you to finish. And I'm thinking, like, this guy's going to think Glenn's crazy. That's kind of where I thought he was going to go. Instead, he was fired up about it. He leaned in, and his whole demeanor changed.
It did.
I mean, it's really, I think, for someone like Mike, who takes the Constitution and the founding of this country, not only seriously, but in a sacred way. I mean, for someone like that to see this constant violation, it has to be beating him up. Being in Washington and dealing with this all the time.
It is.
It has to be.
I asked him this question. Play the question without the answer about Donald Trump.
You and I felt very much the same about Donald Trump, I think. I was concerned, and I'm still concerned, about the public behavior of the president. However, I will tell you, at times it feels really good to see him just punch people in the face, and that's not, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but you have that human reaction. When I was judging him for the election, I was judging him on that and what record he did have, and none of it was conservative. The president's not a conservative, but he has done and accomplished some amazing things, Israel probably being paramount on that. How is your relationship with Donald Trump? How do you view him now going into this next election?
His answer, I found surprising, and because of the way he answered it.
Yeah.
And I'll play it in just a minute.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
So global markets are very, very dicey. We're fortunate to have some stability here in America. In fact, the mortgage interest rates are well below where many experts predicted they would be this time last year. But if our trade war with China backfires or European markets start to unravel, it will have a dramatic effect on banks, and the Fed will be forced into raising interest rates probably quickly. Right now is the time to buy or refinance or lock in a fixed rate mortgage. It might be really important to refi all of your credit cards and get that monkey off of your back. The savings could be hundreds or even thousands of dollars in annual interest payments, and especially if you are in a variable mortgage, if interest rates really start to skyrocket, it's going to save you a ton if you take care of it now. If you're wondering if you're paying too much, it is time to take advantage of a free mortgage review from American Financing. They're salary-based mortgage consultants. They'll tell you all of your options in less than 10 minutes. It's American Financing. I want you to go there now or call them at 800-906-2440. 800-906-2440. That's AmericanFinancing.net. 800-906-2440. We break for 10 seconds. Station ID. From a very fascinating podcast with Mike Lee, I asked him, where do you stand on President Trump? Here's what he said.
You're exactly right. I had some concerns with him, and I was probably more vocal than many would have been at the time at expressing those concerns. I have been pleasantly surprised at what he's done. Now, I don't agree with him on everything. There are some things he says that make me nervous. I disagree with him, for example, on trade policy.
Big time.
But I have great respect for the fact that he came to Washington and actually did what he said he was going to do.
Yeah.
More so than any president in modern U.S. history.
People wouldn't be asking for a wall if more people did what they said they would do.
Exactly. I think I fundamentally misunderstood him at the time. I think I was viewing him through the same lens that I view other politicians. He is different. I still don't agree with him on everything, but He's done exactly what he said he was going to do. I have a friend who, toward the end of 2016, pointed out to me something that helped me understand the phenomenon. He said, imagine that we're all in a bar and everybody senses that a bar fight is about to break out. And all of a sudden, there's one guy who's big and strong and tough, and he takes out a beer bottle and he breaks it across the table and he holds it up and brandishes it against those who are opposing him. Everybody has to decide which person to line up behind. They're probably going to line up behind that person. Mm-hmm. I think that resonates with what happened in 2016. I think people had enough, and they wanted somebody who would go in and knock over a few tables.
And I think that's where the left is now. I mean, the right is still there, but the left is there now, too, saying, we need a bottle breaker.
Right, right, and which makes for an interesting inflection point. We've got a choice. And I think that choice is going to force us either to become a more conservative nation, a nation that recognizes and trusts in the dignity of individual human beings and communities and churches and neighborhoods and synagogues and civil society, or a government that marches to the progressive drumbeat, federalizes more power, decentralizes more power in Washington, D.C. That will be the choice that we've got to make in our next election cycle, and I hope we choose the right option.
Are you willing to say you would or would not vote for Donald Trump?
Oh, I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to support him. I think he has proven that he's willing to drain the swamp even when it doesn't want to be drained. And so it makes me more comfortable with him than I was in 2016. I didn't really know him at the time. I've gotten to know him since then. We've actually become friends since then. We talk on a very regular basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the first year, he would routinely remind me of the fact that I was hard on him in 2016. It finally stopped toward the end of 2017 when I said, look, that's behind us now. We've worked together a lot, and he doesn't bring it up anymore.
It's amazing. It's a great interview. Don't miss it. Just sign up for the Glenn Beck podcast wherever you download your podcast.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
Well, this is a perfect lesson on how our culture has crumbled in America. A bunch of burglars were caught, asked by cops, why are you doing this? They said, because they have a right to the nice things in unprotected homes. They deserved your stuff. And the unprotected home, the one without a burglar system, burglar alarm, is an open invitation. And if they could get in and get it, they deserve it. No regard for you, no regard for your home. Why are we making it easy? Get Simply Safe. Simply Safe Home Security. It's award-winning protection that's $14.99 a month. That's less than half of what the other guys charge. There are no long-term contracts. You're never locked in. You can pay month to month without fear of financial stress because you can cancel at any time because there's no contract. Simply Safe has a massive deal going on right now. If you go to simplysafebeck.com, you're going to get a free home security camera when you order. That's $100 value. They'll have eyes on your home 24/7. Video evidence of somebody trying to get in. It's simplysafebeck.com. That's simplysafebeck.com.
That monthly podcast comes out on Saturday. You can get it wherever podcasts are. Also go to the Glenn Beck YouTube channel. If you subscribe there, you can get all 36 episodes available now.
Welcome to the program. This is a first. You'll tell your kids and your grandkids someday. I was listening to the Glenn Beck program the first day that they had a Democratic national candidate on, somebody who was running for the presidency of the United States in the Democratic side. We have tried over and over and over again for 20 years. They do not want to ever come on. First time ever. A lesser known candidate at this point, but I think a guy who could go all the way, and he might even get my support. Ami Horowitz, how are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Glenn. It's been a long time since I've been here in person, so I just want to drink it in. I want to take it in.
Yeah.
Super excited.
Yeah. So you're not the kind of guy that I would expect to be running for president of the under the Democratic ticket.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I'll be totally honest.
Yeah.
But look, okay, the honest truth is I am always country over party. I mean, I never cared about an R or a D or an I next to my name. It's all about what are the important issues that Americans face. And those are the issues that animate me, and those are the issues that drive me. And that's why I decided I needed a platform for those viewpoints. And mm-hmm. I think that the Democratic Party in particular is doing itself a great disservice by the radicalization that is the radical transformation, I should say, that's gone through over the past several years. And we've seen an inexorable move by the Democratic Party to the left over the last, you know, 15 years. But we've seen that in hyperdrive over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's destroying the party. And I think they need somebody to right the ship. And I think I'm that captain.
Okay.
I think
right.
I'm the guy.
So now you've registered, you filed the papers.
It's all a done deal,
all
man.
All done.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the interesting thing. You're not for socialism.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Right.
No.
Right. Right. Many
so
people.
So I don't really fit into the mold of,
yeah,
of who's running.
Saying.
Is that where you're going with this?
But again, here's the interesting thing. If you get donations, even if it's a dollar
yeah.
per donation, right?
50 cents?
If you get 65,000 individuals giving you even 50 cents, you are then guaranteed a spot on the debate stage.
It's a massive hack. To get on the Democratic debate. Now, not this is again, this is a serious run.
Yeah.
I have serious issues I want to address. I am a registered Democrat, just to be clear. But yes, 65,000.
How long have you been a registered Democrat?
Oh, God, man. In my heart or on a filing?
Hmm. Well,
it really, the heart is what
the
matters.
The heart is what matters,
yeah.
right?
You've yeah. been there for a long time.
Long time. I'm a Jew. I mean, I think that you're born with a Democratic voter card.
I think that's the way it works.
Your birth certificate and a, yeah. But
the actual filing.
It's been about 2 months.
About two months.
I've been trying it on. It's like a new suit you get made to measure.
But to be clear, Bernie Sanders is not much longer than that.
No. So Bernie Sanders does a very interesting thing. He's an independent, and he's an independent as a senator and is for years. And then he always switches several months before the election to a Democrat. No different than what I'm doing myself.
And you're actually not, because you're not a Republican either. You are an independent.
I am an independent. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, what do you think they're going to do when you have 65,000 people donating to your campaign and that qualifies you to be on that debate stage?
There needs to be a lot of heart doctors available at the DNC the moment that happens. I think they're clearly they don't want me on the stage. And in fact, I can't get the details now, but there's been moves already to try to abort this candidacy early on.
And they're good at abortion.
They are good at abortion.
That's true.
Yeah.
Late term.
It could happen on stage. They could just let you die.
Listen, I mean, in fact, I think the Republicans wanted to get Democrats on board with capital punishment, just very late term abortion.
right. But because we talked about this, you know, just a few days before you did it. And I said, they're never going to let you on the stage. And you said, no, the rules are they have to.
The rules are very clear. If they decide, okay, they're in a box. Okay, they've got two choices.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have 65,000 people send me a dollar, anything that gets me on that stage, their choices are either they can change the rules, their own rules, which would put them in a really tough situation because they've, you know, Tom Perez, when they first announced what the requirements were, and they did it because they were so stung by the criticism that they got when Bernie Sanders essentially, you know, they conspired against him and the rules allowed for them to do that, that they wanted to make this, in his own words, the most open process they've ever had. And he said he wants a diversity of candidates. I'm not sure he meant intellectual diversity, but anyways, that's what he's getting. Now, if they do change that, he has to go back on everything he said, and he has to. There's gonna be a lot of people, and I'm looking at your board right now. Which, by the way, is my name on this board?
No,
we're shocked
to find out it was not on.
I don't know who's responsible for that board.
Somebody needs to get fired.
Not either of us.
Not either of us.
Is it you? You look guilty, my man. So therefore, a lot of these guys' board, they'll take them off the board also, because they don't put me on and they change the rules. They can't just keep me off specifically. They're going to have to, you know, a lot of people are qualifying the same way I am. They'll be off the board also, or they have me on and I'm going to make the Democratic debate stage a very unsafe space for them.
Because I would imagine if they just decided to change the rules and say, we don't believe you're a real Democrat, or whatever they tried to do, they would be opening themselves up to real legal problems.
There's some First Amendment issues. There's some constitutional issues that I think have never actually been discussed about what a party is allowed or not allowed to do, which I think would be a whole other interesting rabbit hole for us to go down.
And you're not talking about anything necessarily radical. You're talking about things that the Democrats would find radical.
Look, I think that if I had done this 30 years ago, 25 years ago, I think I would find a very comfortable place in the Democratic debate stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I look at myself and think I'm pretty ideologically aligned with a Scoop Jackson or Patrick Moynihan or JFK, mm-hmm. to be honest. But those guys, if they ran again today, they would be run off a rail in the Democratic Party. They just don't fit what the Democratic Party is. And that's not a good thing. We need to have two strong parties. We have to keep each party in check. I don't think it's healthy to have one party that's dominating and one that's not. But the issues that they, it's really, look, it's amazing. I would say a lot of their positions now, if you looked at like right-wing conspiratorialists, and what they would say Democrats really believed in, and go, oh, you're insane. That's really what they believe in now.
No, I know.
Okay?
I know.
Those Democrats believe in open borders. Yeah, that's actually what they... There's Juan Castro. I think his name's Juan. Is Juan Castro?
Julian Castro?
Juan Castro is like a shortstop for the Astros, I think. But Julian Castro, he said he wants open borders. Okay, these are actual positions that they're taking. I mean, Joe Biden, who's the great middle of the road moderate, he said we want illegal aliens to have health coverage in this country. I mean, these are radical, insane positions that the majority of the country, vast majority, probably the majority of the Democratic Party, I feel pretty comfortable saying, do not feel comfortable with.
You know, here's one of my theories. If you look at the polling numbers, where Joe Biden is leading in some polls by 40 points, what's the lowest? 25 points? 21 points? Something like that?
Give or take.
He's way ahead of everybody else, and I think that's because Americans know him and they don't feel as though he's a radical socialist.
I don't think they know him. I got to be honest. I mean, I think they knew him before.
Right.
I don't know what he is now.
I agree with you on that. But I think the Democrats see him and they just go, oh, he's just Joe Biden. And he's not crazy and he's not totally radical. I think he is, but he doesn't have that perception.
Right.
And with him being 20 points ahead of anybody else, it shows that the Democratic voter is not with this socialist stuff.
Yeah,
they're way too radical.
Yeah, I mean, they just did a poll on some healthcare issues, and healthcare consistently comes for Democrats as the number one priority. They want that addressed. They polled Medicare for All specifically, and only 47% of Democrats supported Medicare for All, which puts you in the majority position on the number one issue. If that doesn't qualify you as a valid candidate, I don't know what is.
How do you know I don't want Medicare for All?
Well, I mean,
well, I haven't.
That's true. I just assumed. That's true.
No,
you want Medicare for All?
I do not.
Look, okay, there you go.
I mean, here's the thing about our healthcare system, which is incredible to me, which I don't know if they know. I don't know if these Democrats even care. But we have the most innovative healthcare system the world has ever known. There's a reason why 50% of all innovation across healthcare, that could be bioengineering, medical devices, pharmaceutical, all happens in this country. It's because we have a robust profit system that allows people to invest money, take massive risks. You know how much billions of dollars it takes to investigate an avenue for a drug? And hey, there's no guarantee of success, but they take the risk to do that because there's a profit incentive. The question is not about that side of the equation. We got to keep the cost down. There are other ways to do that. And to overturn our entire healthcare system for essentially 10% of people who don't have coverage. Because remember, 90% of people, when they introduced Obamacare, 90% of people had coverage, whether it be personal coverage or through their jobs. Mm-hmm. But for 10%, instead of finding a way to cover that 10%, which I want to do, they overturned our entire system. This is what we're talking about, the radicalism of the Democratic Party, where norms don't make a difference anymore.
So did you see what happened in Ukraine?
No.
So the
Ukraine. It's a pretty open question. I mean, a lot of things happened in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming
you're talking about Biden's kid?
No. Huh? Okay. No, I'm,
but we
I'm
have
talking
talked about that quite a bit. That is an interesting
have.
Story.
I'm talking about the new Ukrainian president.
Oh, the comedian.
Is a comedian.
Yes, right. Of course. A number of things have happened in Ukraine since then.
Yeah, I know that. But the world is at a place to where a disruptor, Donald Trump, you, could actually walk away with a nomination and possibly win a nomination.
Look, if you had said to me, if you had asked me 4 years ago, is this possible? I would say, come on. I said, of course not. But when the president of the United States essentially won the nomination, the presidency on a troll.
Right.
I think anything is possible.
Yeah.
Anything is possible. No, look, there is a wide open lane for somebody like me. And I think that the challenge is trying to get the Democratic electorate to understand what I'm doing and who I am. And the fact that I don't think any of those guys on the board over here can beat Donald Trump. I think I can. And I think if they want a Democrat in the White House, I'm their guy. And all it takes is one. That's the crazy thing about this. They don't have to send me $100, $1,000. If they go to omniforamerica.com, for $1, they can see the greatest show on earth. And by the way, you know who wants me on more than anybody else? The networks holding the debates. I guarantee you that I will double or triple, if not larger, what their audience was from the last time they had a Democrat debate.
Oh, I could guarantee that because everybody on the right would be watching.
Oh my gosh.
Everyone on the right would not miss that. Because I wouldn't want to see you just go up and mock it, which I don't think you're trying to do.
No.
I would like you to go up and say, look, when did we start believing that as Democrats? When did we go here? This is nuts.
When did capitalism become a dirty word? Mm. When the greatest system ever devised by man, literally, I would literally say that, mm-hmm. that has created more wealth for more people, brought more people out of poverty, and to run away from that system to a system that we see demonstrably does not work. I mean, we're seeing it today in Venezuela. Venezuela is a democratic socialist country. Let's make no mistake about it. It's not the Soviet Union. It's a democratic socialist country. And we're seeing it implode. Now, I'm saying they're not looking to model themselves after that. But that's the road they're going down. Mm-hmm. So all I'm looking to do.
Well, they were modeling themselves after that until Maduro, until it collapsed.
And they did praise Hugo Chavez profusely back in the day.
You know what? I stand corrected. Yeah, and by the way, there is this weird undercurrent in the Democratic Party that supports Maduro and has not been attacking him. It's a weird kind of thing. I don't know where
Code Pink took over.
I was there in D.C. when Code Pink had rallies for Maduro. Mm. What is going on? This is everybody, I'm telling, this is the road they want to take us down. So this is not a joke. I'm not looking there to mock them, but I want to hold them accountable for their beliefs. Because let me tell you who's not going to hold them accountable, the mainstream media. Okay, they're not going to ask the tough questions about their beliefs and what that's going to do to this country. I will. I promise you that. If I get on that stage, I will make sure that every view they have, however radical it is, I will hold them accountable for it.
I think that it is really, I think it's a service to the Democrats, to the voters. Mm-hmm. It really is.
See,
there's no diversity.
Huh? This should give me a medal.
How about instead of a medal, a $1 donation to omniforamerica.com. This is a real campaign.
AMI.
AMI for America.com. Any donation, 50 cents, will do it. They just need 65,000 individual people.
Oh, it's .org. It's .org.
Oh, or .com. I have them all. Or .net.
Okay.
Oh, come on. I cover my bases here. Come on. You're not dealing with a rookie.
Well, do you have it also, Amy? A-M-Y, just in case?
I should have, actually.
Yeah, you should have.
But I was going to say this is not my first rodeo, but this is definitely my first rodeo.
Ami Horowitz, AmiForAmerica.com or .org or .net.
Oh, I want to see this so bad.
I do, too. Make a 50 cent or a dollar donation. It's well worth it. Thank you so much, Ami.
Thank you.
Let me tell you, our sponsor this half hour is Relief Factor. In America, it's estimated over 50 million people miss work due to pain. 50 million people. 66% of those people feel like they're going to live in pain for the rest of their lives. Pain is an epidemic, and it. I mean, I just, you know, I go to the hospital and you're in pain, whether it's me or my kids or anything, I'm like, make the pain stop. They're like, well, I don't know. No. We live in 2019. Make the pain stop. Here is, you know, in an emergency situation, they can. But in a long-term situation, man, it can just destroy your body. You need something natural. You need something that reduces the inflammation that makes the pain stop. And that, I have found, is Relief Factor. I take it three times a day. ReliefFactor.com is where you can order it. ReliefFactor.com or call 800-583-84. 800-583-84. ReliefFactor.com. Tonight, 5 o'clock on Blaze TV. Ami Horowitz is going to be with me, and we're going to be recording a podcast that you will see. But I'm going to treat him as what he is, a serious candidate for the Democratic Party, and talk to him about all of the policies of the Democrats and where he stands on them and what he would do. A Democrat that just needs the 65,000 donations... 50 cents or a dollar.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.